So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. The first 100 days in office is a common benchmark way to assess the new elected officials. Mm-hmm. So Wisconsin, I want to thank Governor Tony Evers for coming in. We're a few days short of your first 100 days, so excuse us, but thank you for making time.
That's quite all right.
Okay, Mr. Former Science Teacher, Mr. Career Educator, right. What grade do you give your first 100 days?
Oh, it's an incomplete. You can't make any judgments on the first 100 days. Actually, it's funny you bring it up because, to me, November 7th was the beginning part. I know Scott Walker was still in office then, but we've been working then, you know, with the transition teams, getting input, setting up our budget, and then we went into the lame duck. All that happened before we were inaugurated in office. So, yes, I certainly it's an incomplete. You can't make a judgment on the
no B plus, no B minus, no A minus.
I certainly couldn't grade myself, to be honest with you.
What's the best part of being governor?
Well, I'll tell you, the best part continues to be the best part of campaigning for governor, and that is listening to the people of Wisconsin. I'm not saying that with anything about anything other than listening to people is really important. And if you listen to them, by golly, they'll tell you what's important. And so I found it very rewarding to continue to go out and make sure that our administration is in sync with the people of Wisconsin. That's been good. I've been very pleased with the way we've, you know, staffed up in our agencies and in the governor's office. We have great people in place. And so I feel good about the services we're offering. Clearly, the political world is complex, but as far as the governing and managing the affairs of the state, I think it's been great.
And so if meeting the people of Wisconsin is the best part, is the worst part the hours spent and the nuts and bolts, like drafting a budget and all that?
Yeah, that and, you know, the constant. And it's not constant, but, you know, the huffing and puffing, as I call it, around, you know, various issues. And I know people have to mark their territories, and I get all that. It gets, you know, weary. It gets weary for all of us. I know it gets weary for the people of the state. But it's also part of what we do. But, no, I'm loving it. It's great.
Biggest success?
I would say the ability to... people are so thankful to be listened to. They really are. I mean, that type of gratitude, it's not that I'm seeking that kind of gratitude, but when people say, I've never had an opportunity to talk to the governor, I've never had the opportunity to be in disagreement with the governor face-to-face, that sort of thing. That to me, sends a message that we need to do a better job of listening.
Biggest disappointment?
The lame duck session. Clearly, it's been a time consumer, and it got us into a position immediately in conflict with the Republicans in the legislature. You know, it happened, and we're trying to move on, and we will move on at some point in time. We'll get through the lawsuits, but that just was a bad way to start. And we spent a lot of time hoping and working hard to convince the governor to veto some of that language, and that didn't happen. And so I think there was a lot of wasted effort in that area, but we're moving on.
You surprised at the fairly rough reception from the Republican leadership, sir?
Not really. No, I mean, I understand. I'm not belittling huffing and puffing, because I know that's part of everybody's job. But I think we're still civil with each other. We just met the other day. I thought the meeting was fine. At the end of the day, we have to have a budget for the people of Wisconsin, and we'll reach a consensus there. But in the meantime, there will be always some fighting and jousting and that sort of thing. But that's part of it. The thing that I am finding more interesting is that, as you know, there is a bubble over the not just Madison, but I'd say the Capitol. And when I see the Marquette poll that said that 70% of the people want to have Medicaid expansion.
Oh, how'd you know? You read my list of questions. I didn't. Excuse me.
I've never been able to read upside down, so that's not the case. But the when 70% say that, and then the other side says, "Oh, by the way, that's never going to happen, Tony. So just forget it." That just seems inconceivable to me. We have to believe that the people of the states will. As Fula Follett said, is the law of the land. And if we just ignore that, I think we diminish it. I think we diminish the process.
Well, I was going to ask you about your three key issues, you know, K-12 funding and health care and transportation. Right. So we just got into health care.
Right.
The Republicans have said, you know, read our lips, it's not going to pass.
Right.
What's your plan B? Or don't you feel that you need a plan B?
Medicaid expansion is baked into our health care.
It's really interwoven.
Absolutely.
Your health services secretary says we need it to invest in health care in other ways.
Right. I mean, you think about all the health-related issues we have in the state, whether it's opioid addiction or mental health or making sure that African-American moms and their babies have good health outcomes instead of bad health outcomes. Those are big issues, and we can't address them without the resources. And just by merely taking that Medicaid expansion, expanding care to 82,000 people, we will generate enough revenue from the federal government to do those things. To me, it's a no-brainer. Obviously, that the other side doesn't agree. But if 70% of the people say, yes, that's what we want, that's important.
And if it doesn't pass, have you seen any estimates of how much more GPR you'd have to plow into the health services budget to maintain our MA benefits?
Yeah, I know it's hundreds of millions.
Hundreds of millions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's go to the other two issues. Yeah. The Republicans, including Senator Olson, chairman of Senate Ed, has said we cannot afford a $1.5 billion upper. But as you just noticed, the Mr. Franklin's poll, the number on that is 74% increased funding for special ed.
Right.
So if the Republican budget did have some substantive increases but didn't hit your $1.5 billion, how big a loss is that, sir?
Well, it'd be a loss, but I'll tell you, the issue of funding for special education is critically important.
You're not going to budge off that $600 million?
No, I think that's an important number. And it hasn't been raised in more than 10 years. And it impacts, you know, we can't go back to the days. I mean, we're still there, frankly. You saw it in the last election where people are saying, hey, if you're not going to do the job state, we're going to go to a referendum. We're going to do it that way. Well, there are winners and losers. And we're finding out some places are losing big time, like Palmyra Eagle School District, where they cannot pass a referendum. It seemingly is impossible. So somehow
they were going to vote to dissolve, or was that?
Yeah, I haven't heard the final on it, but yes, it's kind of Florence School District Revisited in my mind,
yeah,
where people are angry.
7 or 8 years ago,
you know,
maybe 10.
People, it just breaks a community apart. Nobody wants to do that. So and the speaker's task force that he had, Blue Ribbon Task Force on Education, talked about special education funding. So I think we can get someplace. I will continue to advocate for what I propose. I think equity is a real important part of distributing state aid, and if a kid needs an extra lift, they should get it. If it costs more money, that should be part of it. But I think we'll get some agreements and move forward in that area.
What about the area of transportation? At one point, Co-Chair Nygren said there might be a way to work together, but Senator Darling said, well, Senate Republicans are not there yet.
Right.
You're still at 8 cents, which would go to 9.6 with indexing.
Right.
Do you believe that getting rid of minimum markup would more than offset that 9.6, Governor?
It could. I know the
Fiscal Bureau will not score it.
Yeah, it's a hard one to score to start with, because that number could be 14 cents. It could be more. It could be less. And that's what Secretary Designee Thompson was talking about in front of Joint Finance Committee. It's hard to score, but the fact of the matter is there will be some mitigation of that 8 cents or 9.6.
Some mitigation.
Absolutely. But it's hard to score, and I appreciate the view on that. But the bottom line is, as we know from the election and everything that we've talked about since, is that our roads still are viewed as one of the worst set of roads in the nation. We have to make sure we have good mass transit. All those things are connected to economic development, which is important to Republicans and Democrats. We're going to have to solve it. I understand the Marquette poll said
57% do not support raising any taxes or fees. 39% are willing to accept them.
Right. And people also say, let's fix the roads. And so there is obviously, we collectively need to do a better job of convincing the people of Wisconsin the wisdom of this. But I do believe that at the end of the day, instead of borrowing and fixing our roads and paying an extra lots of money just to do 20% of the budget now goes towards debt service of the transportation budget. And that's just crazy. That's unsustainable. So we have to do something. And I believe at the end of the day, raising revenue through the gas tax is one of those ways.
Mr. Franklin's poll, your job approval ruling, rating, 47%. Satisfied with that?
I don't even think about that.
You don't? How about in the context that you're one percentage point better in terms of approval than President Trump?
Well, I guess that's a win. But to be honest with you, it's early. And second of all, at this point in time, it has no relevance in the way I do my job or plan to do my job.
I want to ask you about one comment made by President Trump when he deals with potential South American immigrants. We're full as a nation. Don't come. What's your reaction as a governor to that, sir?
I think he should, if he believes that, he should take down the Statue of Liberty. I mean, what a statement to make about our country. We're not full. Do we need to protect against bad people coming into our country? Of course, we always have. But if you think about Wisconsin, you look at the dairy industry in Wisconsin. If we said to the people that are undocumented in the state, see you later, that industry would dry up and blow away. It is dependent upon labor that is mostly undocumented because it takes so long to make it happen. Yeah. We have to be a welcoming people. We are better than to say, we're a hotel and it says no vacancy on it, that with a flashing light. That's ridiculous.
I'm also intrigued by medical marijuana and the Charles Franklin poll, 83% support it. You survived cancer of the esophagus. Mm-hmm. You've been cancer-free for how long?
11 or 12 years.
Right. When you were getting treated for that, did the people who didn't want you to suffer, did they suggest that you may use medical marijuana?
No, that was never part of the conversation.
Never part of the conversation.
But I do believe that people should have that ability to personally do that. I think it's important. Obviously, the poll showed that most people believe it. It's in our budget. Hopefully it'll pass. I know people tend to believe it's a slippery slope to full recreational marijuana and all that. I'm asking the legislature let's start with this and take care of the issues that deal with medical marijuana. Greg Underheim, remember him from years ago? He ran for state superintendent one time, actually, against Libby Burmaster. And when he was a Republican legislator, way back then, he was proposing this. It's time.
Would you be willing to drop, staying on the marijuana issue, would you be willing to drop your proposal to decriminalize up to 30 grams if it got you medical marijuana, Governor?
I'm not in a position to negotiate through the media, but we need to make, I think, the other one really isn't a marijuana issue. It's frankly treating people fairly, keeping people out of our justice system where they don't need to be. I view that as less of a stepstone to recreational marijuana. I think it's more an issue of criminal justice reform, and I think it's an important one.
Senator Darling, when the public hearings opened on the budget with the agency heads, your cabinet secretaries, she said, I'm paraphrasing, we cannot afford $6 billion more in spending, especially when we wipe out the structural deficit. Your response?
Well, I have great respect for Senator Darling. I consider her a good acquaintance. We've known each other a long time. But the structural deficit, the concern about structural deficit has waned and waxed over the last few years. And for the most part, it's not that I dismiss it, but to suddenly think that structural deficit is something that is just inconceivable, we have to get rid of it this moment, that hasn't been the past. And I believe it's somewhat inconsistent to say, now today it's a big deal. So it is an issue. It's something we should tackle. It's, you know, everybody'd love to hit a home run on it, but you have to have people on base in order to hit a grand slam home run. We can work on it.
The Republicans put a income tax cut on your desk. You vetoed it.
Right.
Will you veto a state budget that doesn't include another middle-class income tax cut, sir?
I think we can to answer your question, I think we can probably get there. It was about how it was going to be funded. And at the end of the day, we do need both sides get – the good news is both sides agree we need that 10% for the middle class of the mm-hmm. state. How we get there, but I think we can find a way to do that.
When you were superintendent of schools, you were a advocate, a policy wonka spokesperson. Okay. Now you're the leader of the Democratic Party. Is that a tough transition for you?
No.
Okay.
It's a transition, but it's not a tough transition. And I'll tell you why. That the policy wonkiness of public education is absolutely connected the dots to every other area, whether it's affordable housing, whether it's corrections, whether it's making sure we have good roads. All those things are connected, and I think the policy wonkiness of that area translates into good public policy.
When the 17 or 18 Democratic presidential candidates call you wanting your endorsement, and you know they're calling,
yes.
What are you telling them?
I'm saying I'm sitting out the primary, but please come to Wisconsin. Wisconsin is an important place for Democrats to be, and I'll be glad to appear with any candidate and make sure that they're welcome to Wisconsin in an appropriate way. But it is important that they be here. The Franklin poll or the Franklin poll, Marquette poll said the same thing.
Yes.
We're a purple state, and if the Democrats want to win the election against President Trump, they better be here.
How'd you vote in the last Democratic primary?
Somebody just asked me that today, and I refuse to answer it.
It's okay.
My wife and I, when we vote, it's most times we don't tell each other who we voted for, so I'm not going to share it with, if I don't share it with her or vice versa, I'm not going to share it.
I understand that, and I respect that. Okay, just a couple more questions.
Sure.
I know we're running out of time. When Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald says he can't wait for Judge Hagedorn mm-hmm. to become Justice Hagedorn, do you worry that he's a former chief of staff to Governor Walker? Do you worry that he will be biased in future cases involving your administration's priorities and policies, sir?
Well, certainly that is a worry. But we have a new justice of the Supreme Court, and he says whatever his personal issue, you know, personal beliefs are or personal biases may be, he's leaving them at the courthouse door. I have to believe him, but it does concern me that the statement is, I can't wait till he gets here because now we have another avenue to be in opposition to the governor. That concerns me, but I have to believe that the new justice will be fair.
Okay. The first 100 days is a very inexact measurement.
Mm-hmm.
Goals for the next 100 days, Governor?
First of all, I think 100 days will take us close to the beginning of the school year, right? And we have to have this budget done before then. We have to. And we have to, because otherwise board members and community members don't know how to do the tax levies. You know, there's all sorts of, you know, problems with holding back. So my goal would be to have a success would be a budget that makes substantial gains in those three areas I talked about, and I think we can get there.
You sound like you like this job.
Yeah, it's great. I'm having fun.
Governor Tony Evers,
thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Good to see you again.
Talking about your first 100 days.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Appreciate it.